The fact of the matter is that I don't believe anyone, there is anyone out there who isn't somewhere on the addiction continuum.
Yeah.
Whether you are tethered to an addiction by a chain, let's say by heroin, or by people pleasing, which is a thread, right? You're still tethered.
Yeah.
Let's just destigmatize this idea of addiction and recognize it as being a major obstacle in the life of every follower of Christ.
What would you say to somebody right now who's watching and they might say, man, I can really see where that kind of desperate need would motivate you to turn towards God and embrace a way of life that could be very powerful. But I honestly, I don't feel that right now. What would you say to them?
I might say something like, well, why don't you? I mean, if you're reading the same Bible I'm reading, why don't you have the same level of desperate need for God? Why are you not in touch with that? Because theologically you are, intellectually we know you are.
Yeah, in reality
we are. You are not experiencing, you are not having a felt experience of that desperation.
Mm.
This program is for broken crayons. And if you don't see yourself as a broken crayon, I don't really have much more I can do to convince you that this way of life would be of service to you and of use to you and bring you into a deeper relationship with God. However, why don't you just try it? Why don't you try it on and see what happens?
Mm. Well, today you get to meet somebody who is a friend, a pastor, a thinker, a writer, incredibly gifted guy. Ian, I first met years ago at a conference down in San Jose where you were speaking, and it was just kind of riveting. I love the way that your mind works. He is hilariously funny. His book on the Enneagram, lots and lots of you, I'm sure, are familiar with because it's been super helpful to over a million folks. Chasing Francis, about Francis of Assisi, memoir, amazing writing. And now he has written a book called The Fix. And it's all about the 12 steps and making the 12 steps available as a framework for spiritual growth to anybody, for well-adjusted people, he says, assuming that there are such things. And deeply needy folks. And so when we found out a while ago that we were both working on books on the same topic that were coming out within a week or two of each other, Ian said, why don't we both talk with each other about that and kind of join forces and help to point people in the direction of a wonderful tool? I thought that was kind of brilliant and a gift. So Ian, thank you so much. I'm so glad to get to have this conversation.
John, I'm thrilled to be here. I've been looking forward to it for days.
Well, this is kind of a unique one. I'd love to hear, first of all, we'll get to the book and why you wrote it and that journey in a minute. But first of all, you've had such an interesting journey in your work, pastoring, writing, speaking, being with people. And it's been a real rich thing for me, and even Nancy and I, the four of us, to get to share bits of that kind of journey together. Tell me a little bit about that. Just let folks know a little bit about what's the journey been like for you as you have kind of discovered your vocation and what it is that you love doing and why.
Thanks, John. I was raised as a Roman Catholic kid. I went to Catholic schools. I was one of those people who doesn't look back on that experience with negative feelings. In fact, if anything, I have a terrific debt of gratitude to my Roman Catholic background. I had a profound experience of the transcendent, of the mysterium tremendum, going to Mass. Mm-hmm. And it really planted a seed in my heart about the beauty of God and the immediacy of God as in my life. Fast forward, I was a young life kid in high school. At the time, my father was dying from alcoholism and drug addiction. He was in the early phases of dying. And I was a needy kid. And so I heard the gospel. I was already a Christian. I really believed that.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard the gospel in a new way. I was introduced to scripture at that time in a way that I hadn't been previously. And, you know, I lived this wonderful portfolio life. I have my writing, my speaking, my podcast, I do some coaching and spiritual direction, and, you know, all these different things really are part of this some potpourri of things that I do end up being the vehicles that support my mission in life, which is really to introduce people to ideas and experiences that will deepen and enrich their lives. Yeah, it's a privilege to have had all these strange, you know, buckets, professional, vocational things that I do.
What a great mission. I wish I'd have thought of that years ago. That sounds really, really worthwhile and adventuresome.
It is. And I would say, too, that one of the interesting things for me, just as you were asking that question, I was thinking about how my Catholic upbringing had such a profound impact on me as I moved into a more Protestant space. Mm-hmm. I never quite felt at home in the evangelical world because I was so influenced and later did doctoral work at Fordham for 2 years, right? So, which is a Jesuit university. Yeah. And so I was so formed by people like Thomas Merton. Merton was probably the most influential writer in my spiritual life. I was introduced to the contemplative stream early in my life and to a very sacramental view of the world. And so the marriage of my Protestant and Catholic background has been a really interesting hybrid that I've been able to import ideas from my Catholic experience into my Protestant experience and vice versa and to traffic them back and forth. I've loved that as well.
Well, I think part of why I have found you such a helpful thinker and communicator is the streams that you draw from and the questions that seem really important to you are ones that have always been of interest to me. I don't think I've told you this, but actually, I almost wrote a book on the Enneagram. I ended up writing about 10 years ago a book on the soul keeping. And I was going to make that book a book on the Enneagram, and I was having dinner with a friend, Gary Moon, and he said, no, I think you should write a book about the soul. And so I said, okay, I will. So I went a totally different direction with that. But Enneagram is another one of those tools that helps us understand ourselves in a way that so many people find deeply powerful. And lots of folks have written about that. You've done it in a way that is just delightful and illuminating. And now you do a podcast, Typology, where that's really kind of the basic framework or platform for having conversations. Say a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for those listening, and I'm sure most of your listeners know what the Enneagram is, but it is a personality typology or typing system that teaches there are 9 basic personality styles in the world. Initially it was came into the Christian mainstream first through Jesuits, right? Working with people in spiritual direction and then, you know, mushroomed out into lots of other domains in the Christian world. I'm a guy who thinks that the Enneagram is a really helpful tool, but I look at it with very clear eyes, particularly as a therapist, right? I look at it and I think, you know, it's useful. It's not perfect, but what it does do is I see it as a portal way into a deeper conversation with ourselves and others about our own inner architecture. And if it does that, if it just gets the conversation going,
yes,
right, I'm happy to do that, right? I don't have, you know, I meet some people even in the Christian world, and they think the Enneagram is like some magic thing. And I'm like, you know, don't go too far. Like it's like there was a quote in the Roback to You where I quoted the famous George Box line where he says, you know, all models are wrong, but some are useful.
Mm.
And that's kind of how I see the Enneagram, right?
Yeah.
It's an imperfect model. In many ways, it's wrong about people, but it sure is useful.
Yeah, it opens up conversations, and especially conversations about the parts of my life that I don't like, in ways that somehow bypass destructive shame and are really interesting and even kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if it does that, then I'm delighted.
Well, let's turn now to the 12 steps. We have been on a journey and become new of kind of walking through them and trying to learn about how do we approach change and God and spiritual life. And so I'm very, very eager to read your book. Was so excited when I found out that you were writing it. And just to think that I could try in a small way, but then you also would be pointing to this resource that lots of people might turn to and find help from. What caused you to become interested in the 12 steps? To whatever degree it's appropriate to share or not share, tell us about that journey for you.
Yeah, so I was first introduced to the 12 steps in 1987 when I went into recovery for alcoholism. I was a Christian at the time, right? So I let's just be upfront about that. Yep. Like that nobody is exempt from the possibility mm-hmm. of their own spiritual misadventures, right?
Including even, Christians.
I was just being a good Christian, right? Yeah. And then, but what I like to say is that my first round in sobriety that I just audited the course. Hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I hadn't really signed up for credit yet. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to stop drinking, right? And so I went to a 12-step program for a couple of years, and then you know the desire for alcohol was expelled, and I went on with my life. And periodically I would poke in and out, you know, to meetings from time to time, but not in a way that was wholehearted. You know, I didn't throw myself into it. In 2020, I had a relapse during COVID, and which was very surprising. It was a very embarrassing, humiliating, difficult experience. Mm. I did not speak about it publicly. I didn't think that was appropriate for me or for my family. Yeah. And I wanted time to work on myself. And then, you know, now 4.5 years in, I just felt like, you know what, I have gained so much from the 12 steps as a design for living that has so deepened and enriched my life as a follower of Jesus mm-hmm. that I really want to share it with everybody, because the truth, and even Bill W., the author of the 12 steps, said this, they would revolutionize anybody's life, yeah. right? It's not just for those people. I don't even believe in the term those people, yeah. right? Like, you know, it's for everybody, and whether you're well, so-called air quotes, well-adjusted to down and out, you know, this is a very important design for living. It has revolutionized and transformed the lives of tens of millions of people who were once deemed hopeless. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wanted to democratize those steps and make them available to everybody that they too might derive some of the benefits that alcoholics and addicts of all kinds have enjoyed. Hmm.
And as you talk about that, Ian, with folks, what kind of response do you get from people who say, well, yeah, that might be good for addicts or, you know, people who are, you know, druggies or hopelessly enslaved to something as an addiction, but I'm not an addict myself, so why would I be interested in that? How do you think about that?
That's a great question, John. Well, first of all, let's just define what an addiction is, right? Yeah. Like, an addiction is a compulsive attachment to anything we use to escape discomfort, fill a void, numb pain, deal with trauma, to deal at the spiritual level with the fundamental existential dis-ease that all of us experience in life that may come to us in the form of inner dullness, of lack of purpose and meaning, a feeling that the world, you know, it's just the feeling one has living in a broken world with the knowledge of a far-off country, right? Mm. And just the tension that all of us feel. And so, you know, addictions take so many forms, right? There's a long list in the fix of potential addictions that people might have. But this book is not just for alcoholics and drug addicts, right? It's for perfectionists. It's for workaholics. Mm. It's for sex addicts, porn addicts, food addicts, you know, success addicts. You know, the list is endless. You know, the fact of the matter is that I don't believe there is anyone out there who isn't somewhere on the addiction continuum. Yeah. And I think that's a very biblical idea. It's also in the literature of our mothers and fathers of the faith. And so whether you are tethered to an addiction by a chain, let's say heroin, or by people pleasing, which mm-hmm. is a thread, right? You're still tethered.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You're still, you're still tethered. Yeah. So, let's just destigmatize this idea of addiction and recognize it as being a major obstacle in the life of every follower of Christ.
Yeah. Yep. And as you talk about that with folks, how do people respond? Does that make sense to people? Do they tend to defend against it? How do they receive that way of thinking?
Well, what's interesting is I think because now in the last few years, there's been so much open conversation around mental health and around addictions, and people being willing to share their own journeys openly. Many who are well known in their domain, in their different life spheres. I often when I say I just think everyone's an addict, 90% of people nod their head and go, "Absolutely, yeah. I 100% agree." Interestingly, it's usually the more some streams of Christians, actually, ironically, who have the most resistance to the idea, right? That it's, to use a phrase you would use, it's a little bit of elder brother syndrome, right? It's like, oh, not me. That's not me. But that's actually someone who hasn't done enough inward gazing to see the patterns in their life where compulsive, self-defeating behaviors are taking place every day.
Another word that's loaded and controversial in addition to addiction is sin. How has immersion in the 12 steps and thinking about addiction as a description of the human condition and being away from the world that we were born for, how does that impact how you think about that little word sin?
Yeah. Well, I think you could actually, and this is not original to me, you look at the word addiction and sin as synonyms in many ways, right? Yeah. And so, look, an addiction is looking to an external solution to solve an internal problem. So like when someone says to me, so-and-so has a drinking problem, I'm like, okay, I get it. But here's a better way of saying it. So-and-so has a drinking solution. You say, oh, so-and-so has a porn problem. Actually, no, he has a porn solution. And so the problem is that the solution to his, right, has become a bigger problem than the problem it was trying to solve.
You can never get enough of what almost works.
Exactly. I have a friend of mine who says, if they come up with a pill that will cure alcoholism, I'll take 10 of them.
Yeah.
So
it's really a reality problem. We got a reality problem, and I use drinking or porn or approval or whatever else to try to massage that one. But that the real problem is how do I deal with reality?
Yes. And so what's the genius of the 12 steps in part is this, and this is the stated purpose of the 12 steps by Bill W., their author, as well as it shows up in the 12th step. It is that a human being would have a spiritual awakening. Mm. The steps are designed to facilitate a spiritual awakening of sufficient force that it expels the need and desire for an external solution to internal problems, and it replaces it with an experience of God of a magnitude that leads to freedom from these counterfeits that we repeatedly turn to have the life that we think we want.
Say a little bit more about that spiritual awakening. I know with Bill W., he didn't talk a lot about it, but when he was moving towards sobriety, he's in the hospital. He's had the visit with Ebby T., where Ebby says, "I don't drink because I met with God." And he cries out, "God, if you're out there, show yourself. I will do anything." And then the room is flooded with light, and he has this quite intense experience. How do you think about that? Does the average person need that? Do we want to have that? If they pursue the 12 steps, will they have that? What does that notion of spiritual awakening look like?
Yeah, some people have very sudden, they're blessed with very sudden seismic kinds of spiritual experiences that begin their spiritual journey of healing and intimacy with God. Great. The vast majority of people have what William James and Bill W. referred to as spiritual awakenings of the educational variety, mm-hmm. meaning that they're incremental.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know many people who come into 12-step programs of recovery and they're like, I don't even believe in God. Right. And so like, and then very slowly over time, as they're working the steps and working with a sponsor or, you know, who a mentor, they discover that God sort of incrementally sneaks up on them and they mm-hmm. define themselves in relationship there. Mm. So, you know, if you're expecting, you know, in the fix, I think I say something like, you know, if you're expecting, you know, Cool and the Gang's song Celebration to kick off when you know, do step three, you're yeah. wrong. The chances are it's going to be over time. And I like to think, man, spiritual awakenings, I hope I have serial spiritual awakenings.
Yeah.
You know, new and greater clarity and depth of relationship with God. And there are just moments where they're more accelerated and more profound than others, but I think they're happening all the time.
I think a lot of people who do the kind of stuff that you and I do, work at churches or work as pastors or so, when they go to an AA meeting for the first time, will have this question, how come church can't be more like that? I think yes. a lot of people will experience that. A lot of people have written about that or said that in sermons and so, because there just seems to be a kind of a rawness and a openness and non-pretense and you can be yourself here and get into it. You must have thought about that a fair amount. Why do you think it is that the church isn't or seems not to be able often to be more like an AA meeting?
Man, great question. You know, there's a story in the fix I tell about a guy named Gene, not his real name, but he was a pastor of a, you know, kind of evangelical, conservative, larger church, but he also had a secret drinking problem. Well, he shows up to church one Sunday and he's sozzled. Right. And he's in the pulpit. He's slurring his way through the sermon. Elders figure out what's wrong. They take him out and they did the thing you would hope they wouldn't do. They fired him instead of getting him help and just saying, oh, here's one of those things humans do. Mm. Right. Like yes. they fired him. Right. So a couple of months later, we're in the basement at a meeting. And he says to me, he goes, Ian, can you? It's amazing to me. He said, I've experienced more grace, kindness, forgiveness, welcome and transformation in the basement of a church more than I ever did upstairs. And he said, how I wish they all had a program like this one that would help them find an intimacy with God that they just didn't even know existed, right? Now, the church can learn a lot from those meetings, and we've talked about this before. I think one of the things that's so beautiful about you know, meetings of addicts when they get together is, you know, we've all been humbled. We've all been reduced. We've all had the gift of desperation that brought us there. In many ways, for many people upstairs in churches, you know, God is more of a preference than a desperate need. Mm. Downstairs in the rooms of recovery, if there's no God, we're going to die. So it's actually not a preference. It's a desperate need. To the degree that you are in touch with that desperate need, I think it actually becomes something of a tremendous gift. When it's just a preference, you know, you can go, you know, you can muddle along with just enough spirituality to get you by.
Yeah,
I can't afford to do that, and I'm hoping some people who don't necessarily identify as severe addicts would have a similar experience of that.
So I think for folks who are listening to us right now, if there's a clear addiction or another deep source of pain, deep depression, anxiety that they can't make go away, or deep family pain or so, they may be, you know, ready for a program. I'm thinking now of a person who kind of feels like, my life seems pretty normal. You know, somehow saying, my name is John, I'm a sinner, doesn't carry the same weight as my name is John, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm an addict, or whatever. And so it can be harder for that person to genuinely believe they have a desperate need. What would you say to somebody right now who's watching, and they might say, or listening, and they might say, man, I can really see where that kind of desperate need would motivate you to turn towards God and embrace a way of life that could be very powerful. But I honestly, I don't feel that right now. What would you say to them?
Well, one question I might begin with, if they were in spiritual direction with me, I might say something like, well, why don't you? I mean, if you're reading the same Bible I'm reading, why don't you have the same level of desperate need for God? Why are you not in touch with that? Because theologically you are. Intellectually, we know you are.
Yeah. In reality,
we are. You are not experiencing, you are not having a felt experience of that desperation, right? Now, that might be my first question, you know. My next thing is to say, well, you know, this program is for broken crayons. And if you don't see yourself as a broken crayon, I don't really have much more I can do to convince you that this way of life would be of service to you and of use to you and bring you into a deeper relationship with God. However, why don't you just try it? Why don't you try it on and see what happens? Let's see if by working through these steps, you don't actually find a kind of divine, wonderful desperation, knowing that there's a solution, right? That makes the desperation endurable. And then let's just see where this goes, you know? Throw yourself into it and this way of life and see if you have a spiritual awakening that that will help you derive all the benefits that alcoholics and addicts gain from it.
Both of those are so interesting. That first question, I know that I've thought about this before, what it kind of suggests is actually, if I'm not feeling a desperate need for God, it's not because I'm normal and life is okay. I'm actually doing things to prevent myself from feeling that desperate need for God. And so to reflect on what are the things that I do, and those might be activities or ways of escape or ways of thinking or trying to use some other false God or props, but to identify, actually, I am doing things, consciously or not, that keep me from feeling that, because that would be a natural feeling given my reality.
Yeah, like for example, John, let's just talk about the addiction to work and success. Workaholism is a terrible addiction. What makes it even more insidious is that people actually get stroked for being workaholics. Yeah. They're rewarded for that addiction. But if we go with my definition of an addiction, which is a compulsive, unhealthy relationship with a behavior that has mood-altering effects and negative consequences, I mean, I know plenty of workaholics, as you do, that have lost family, relationships with children, their health, their sense of identity to their work, and it gave them mood-altering effects, right? It made them feel powerful. It made them feel prestigious. It made them feel like they have a boost to their self-esteem, all that stuff. But it has made a wreckage of their life, right?
Yeah.
Now, that workaholism may have been the very thing that you were doing in order to anesthetize yourself to the desperate need for God that is actually present in your life. So actually, maybe they need to follow the thread backwards, right? Like, if I don't feel it, what's actually, as you said, preventing me from feeling it? And is that actually maybe an addiction?
Let me ask you one more question. I'm so grateful for this time. I'm thinking of the person who's listening to us right now and just feels hopeless. And I was at a talk recently that somebody gave, and they're a brilliant person. They have made brilliant contributions to the world, but they had an inner secret story where there were issues of depression and anxiety that were so deep, desire to kill themselves starting very early, that it was just riveting, overwhelming. And in your own journey, there must have been moments where the temptation to feel either hopeless or something in that neighborhood was present. What kept you going through that? How did what you have found here meet you in that place? And what would you say as a pastor and therapist to somebody who's listening and feeling pretty hopeless in this moment?
The first thing is you're not alone. And these things like anxiety, depression, hopelessness, these feelings, as difficult as it is to see it this way in the moment, this is a truth. These are invitations from God to have an experience of intimacy with him that you previously did not know existed. And that's maybe scant help in the moment.
Could you say that one more time? These are invitations? Yeah,
sure. Addictions, helplessness, unmanageability, all of these, you know, afflictive emotions and realities in our life can be and should be, I think, understood as invitations from God to experience a deeper level of intimacy with him than you previously knew existed. Mm. And when you frame it out that way, I think it puts an entirely different frame around the problem. And I would echo what Bill W. says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a solution.
Mm.
There is a solution, right? I remember when I first read that, I was in treatment and for 30 days, and I read that line, there is a solution, yeah. And I almost burst into tears.
Wow.
Right? And, you know, I believe that these a design for living like the 12 steps can be very helpful. Obviously, if you're suffering from depression and you know, crippling anxiety, there's pharmacological interventions that can be used to support you.
Yep.
While you're trying to figure out what was the problem that was creating. But if you're crippled, let's deal with the symptoms here for a second so that we can get you to a place of being healthy enough to deal with what was the actual problem driving it. And I've learned this in the rooms of recovery, the three bravest words I know are, I need help.
Mm.
Mm. I need help. Mm. And we so struggle to reach the point where we can say that. But when we do, when we're able to say, I'm powerless. As a friend of mine, a very successful guy who came to me in the throes of addiction, he said, I'm out of ammo.
That's wonderful.
And I was like, yeah. I was like, dude,
yeah,
that is really good news.
Yeah.
You are out of ammo. Mm-hmm. And I think for everyone to reach, I mean, how could anyone in a moment of conversion say anything else to God except I'm out of ammo?
Yeah.
And so I do believe that moment of profound powerlessness and need is a gift, and it doesn't feel that way, but if you embrace a design for living that can work you through the underlying causes and conditions like of that reality, like the 12 steps, then you will look back on that and go, that was the beginning of my life, not the end.
Wow. Wow. Ian, you talk about this with a level of clarity and depth and openness and winsomeness and reality that is so powerful. And I feel like just talking with you this morning, I have learned so much, and I'm so grateful for that. So I'd invite everybody. It's called The Fix, How the 12 Steps Offer a Surprising Path of Transformation for the Well-Adjusted, the Down and Out, and everybody in between. And I'm sure folks can get it on Amazon or any other place.
Yeah, you bet. The book drops on January 28th, and I'm crossing my fingers, saying my prayers that a couple of lives will be impacted. I love the idea. I tell people, I hope everybody from a guy in the first day of treatment gets a copy of the book in the workbook, or just a soccer mom or a working dad or whatever, you know, at the kitchen table would have access to it. John, I don't, maybe they only practice two of them to start.
Yep.
And it helps their lives. It moves the needle in the right direction. I mean, as a writer, you know this feeling. It's like, okay, let's start there. That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yep. There's a great tractor beam of spiritual life and love from God. And if people can just kind of get moved into it, you know, then the good news is it's not like the universe is neutral. God is at work.
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, that book... also, if you want to listen to Ian, The podcast is called Typology.
Yes.
And he has fascinating folks on it. Anything else people should know about where they can access what it is that you're doing?
Well, John, they can go to my website, ianmorgancron.com, and learn more about not just the fix, but, you know, other things that I'm doing related to the Enneagram and other things. The thing I would highlight for you, John, that I'm so excited about is, you know, I've always been very suspicious as an author of workbooks. Mm. Like, usually they're just peripherals that are actually products that are hopefully going to make more money, right? Like it's just it's being honest here, right? In many cases. But I have always loved writing books, you know, workbooks. And so the workbook is really helpful. It's 120 pages, and it really helps people who aren't going to go necessarily to a 12-step meeting. It actually walks them through the steps,
wonderful,
baby step by baby step. Yep. How do I do it? And it does it in a way that you can do it individually or with a group. And, you know, I'm trying to tell people, look, if you don't want to go to a meeting, that's fine, but get four or five friends together and go do the steps.
Yeah.
And here's the directions on how to do it. And as a group, and see what you get from it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. No, I think that's a great idea. And to actually try it as opposed to just learning about it is where the change happens and the power lies. So,
yep.
Ian Cron, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Hey, you just finished a video from our series, Steps, which is based on John's new book releasing February 4th by the same name, Steps. So if you're catching this video before February 4th, you might want to pre-order the book. You can do that at our website, becomenew.com/steps. And when you pre-order, it will unlock exclusive content from John just for you. While you're there, you can subscribe to Become New to make sure you don't miss any future episodes in this series or any other videos that we do. As a community, we believe in spiritual growth one day at a time, and a big part of that is prayer. There's a team of us that meets each weekday, Monday through Friday, to pray for viewers just like yourself. So if you have a specific prayer request, we would love to pray with you. You can text it to us to 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.